Hello, Z. Can you hear me?
You're very well. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Excellent. So we can start.
Yes, we can start. I'm just going to make an official statement for the recording, so later on when we listen to it, people will know who we all are and what we're doing.
Including me. They will know who I am, right?
Exactly.
And I want to know how you are going to describe me.
Well,
be nice to me when you describe me.
Well, actually, I'm going to do that by asking you some questions about your background so you can do it yourself. How's that?
Now, before we start, do you think we will be finished by noontime at the latest?
At the latest. Usually these things go about an hour. I've had them go 2 hours, but I will make sure it will not go any longer.
2 hours or 1 hour. I'm asking no more than 2 hours, please.
Okay, done.
I have other engagements that I have to attend to, and I must leave at 12 at the latest.
Of course, understood.
Thank you. Okay, I'm ready.
Okay, well, my name is Paul Sandel. It is March 3rd, 2012. I'm an assistant professor at Stephen F. Austin State University in Nacogdoches, Texas, which is home to the East Texas Research Center that houses Representative Charlie Wilson's official archival collection. And I am the director of the Charlie Wilson Oral History Project. I'm here with graduate student Laura Blackburn, and we're interviewing...
Hello,
Laura.
Hello. And we are interviewing Zvi... How do I say your last name?
Laura?
Yes.
What's your last name?
Blackburn.
B-L-A-C-K-B-U-R-N?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. And you are a student or a teacher?
I'm a student.
Okay. Good luck.
She is writing, you'll be happy to know, a thesis on Charlie Wilson. And she's the first student researcher to be using these oral histories.
If when you have something published, please send me a copy. I'm very interested in Charlie.
I will.
Thank you.
Okay, she's smiling ahead. Ear to ear. Okay. Well, I wanted to start off with asking a little bit about your own background. If you could tell us a little bit about yourself and maybe take us up to the time when you first met Charlie, but it'd really help us to know a little bit about your own background.
By all means. My name is Tzvi Rafia. I am an Israeli, born in Israel, grew up in Israel, took my bachelor degree at the Hebrew University in Jerusalem, majoring in the history of modern Middle East and also Arab literature and language. And I, after doing my military service, which is compulsory in Israel, I joined the Israeli Foreign Office, Foreign Service. And my first assignment abroad was in Tehran, Iran, but of course under the Shah, not under the mullahs. That was in the, early 60s. As you can see, I'm not a very young man anymore. And from Tehran, I was posted in Ankara, Turkey.
Okay.
And then I went back to Israel, spent some years in the Israeli Foreign Service in Israel, and then I was sent to Washington. And I started, I was asked to institutionalize the Congressional Liaison Office of the Embassy.
Now, what year was this?
I arrived in Washington in 1973, in the heat of the summer, with my wife and three children. First time ever in the United States. Never been there before, nor as a student, no relatives or family, no on a tour, you know, whatever. I want to make sure, when I say I started the Congressional Liaison Office, I don't mean to say that there were no contacts before with Congress, but they were sporadic, randomly.
Okay.
I started it as an office who had to maintain contact for the embassy with both houses of Congress and both parties. In addition to that, I also maintained contacts with the two political parties, the Republican and the Democratic. And no sooner had I arrived in Washington,
uh-huh.
the 1973 war, which we call the Yom Kippur War,
yes.
started.
Yes.
And I felt like I was throwing, I'm taking lessons in swimming, and all of a sudden somebody comes from behind and pushes me into the water. Here I am in a position where you swim, you survive. If you don't know to swim, you drown.
Yes.
I survived. And instead of staying for 3 years, which is the normal period that you spend abroad as a diplomat, they kept me in Washington for 6 years.
Oh, wow.
We signed the peace treaty with Egypt.
Yeah.
That was under President Carter.
Yes.
And the White House loan, I went back to Israel. Then I retired from the diplomatic service and I started my own business as a consultant to Israeli businesses in dealing with the United States, mainly in Washington.
Okay.
I pretend to my Israeli contacts that I know how Washington works. And for Israeli businesses and for the Israeli people in general, United States is a major, major area of concern, of dependence in a way, if you wish. And so I've been doing that since I left the government in 1980, so it's almost 32 years.
Yeah.
Coming and going to Washington and other places in the United States. So much for myself. Besides, I should say that I am randomly called to comment on Israeli radio and television on U.S.-Israeli relations.
Oh, okay.
U.S. Domestic politics, like elections and things like that.
Yeah, I see you are a commentator quite often. Is there a particular outlet that you continuously work for, or is it just various ones call you independently?
No, I don't work for any outlet.
Gotcha.
They know me. I am on a commentator's list, so to say.
Yeah.
Every now and then they will call me if I am available, if I am willing to talk about the certain subject. Then I would say, all right, and they will. I will go into the TV studio or speak on the phone from home if it's a radio interview, and I do it. I have no commitment to anyone.
Okay.
My only commitment to myself is to know what's going on here, because it's also part of my business to know what's going on here.
Of course.
So much for myself.
Well, now I was led to understand, of course, from George Creel's book, that you first met Charlie Wilson when he came calling to the congressional, or you as the congressional liaison, about the Yom Kippur War in 73.
Yeah, that was very unusual, because normally we diplomats go to Congress, go to Capitol Hill, if we have any business, any dealing with members of Congress or the staff members.
Yes.
Congressmen, senators, they don't go to the embassy only if there is, Independence Day party, or Prime Minister is having, the ambassador is throwing a party for a Prime Minister or something like that.
Sure.
That's more a kind of entertainment. But if an ambassador wants to talk to a member of Congress, he goes to the Capitol Hill. The Prime Minister of Israel, who's coming here next Monday,
okay.
He wants to meet with members of the Senate. He Senate and meet with them there.
Yeah.
Very unusual for a member of Congress to visit an embassy during working hours. Like, if you are invited to a cocktail party at the ambassador's residence, that's normal. You would go there, but you wouldn't come for a meeting at an embassy. The embassy will go to you, but lo and behold, I am getting a call when I am in my office. It's
understood.
It's October 1973. I get a call from our defense attaché's office at the embassy, and asking me if I know Charlie Wilson, a congressman Charlie Wilson. To be honest, I didn't know at the time who is Charlie Wilson.
Uh-huh.
And he said, he says he's coming. He's coming. You know, this is Charlie Wilson's way. Listen, I'm coming. He's coming to my office to get a briefing on the Yom Kippur War. So the defense attaché invites me to come up to his office and be there because I'm the congressional liaison.
Yeah.
So I go there and I wait, and here is a knock on the door, and he is being introduced to us, a tall man with a Texan hat, high boots, and something we never saw in the embassy premise, I mean, before. And he comes with a very, as you know, for me at the time it was a special accent.
Yeah.
And he's coming in and introducing himself. I am Congressman Charlie Wilson from Texas. I am member of this and that committee, by the way, very important committees.
Yeah.
And so I would like to get a briefing on the war.
And this is him. He's on defense at this point, right?
He was, yeah, defense, appropriation, and foreign aid.
Okay.
The two, all, you know, Congress in general is very important to everyone and to every country. But to Israel in particular, these are the two important, more important committees, the foreign aid and the defense appropriation.
Of course.
And so the defense attaché gives him the briefing and everything is fine, and we chat a little bit, and he left. And then a few days afterwards, I don't remember, of course, the exact date, it was in 1973.
Uh-huh.
I get a call as the congressional liaison from Mr. Wilson telling us that he is going to the Middle East. Middle East means Israel.
Uh-huh.
So I remember saying, hey, there are many unexploded bombs and mines and everything around, you know. He wanted to visit the battlefield.
Okay.
And the battlefield was still smoking. But he said, no, I'm going. And there he went. I don't remember the exact date. You know, of course, we can find out when was it. But it was very early. I mean, and we were taken by surprise. And there he went. He went to Israel, and of course he was treated very well as a congressman by the Israeli authorities. And he was taken to the south, where the Egyptian front, and then he was taken to the north, the Syrian front.
Yeah.
And when he got back, he gave me a picture. I don't know who took the picture, maybe he, maybe somebody else, of a destroyed Syrian tank.
Okay.
On the Golan Heights, where was the main battlefield between Israel and Syria, and he inscribed beneath, in the hope that this was the last war.
Gotcha.
Well, was it? I'm afraid not, but at least that it touched us a lot, I must say. I showed it to my friends at the embassy, and
yeah,
that's how it all started.
Well, so speaking of Charlie giving you that picture, you know, again, listening to other interviews and reading some literature on him, they talk often about he's motivated to be a champion of Israel out of both Cold War strategic concerns and then out of a genuine affection for Israel. What was his conversations with you, or what was your sense for why he was such a champion of Israel?
Well, indeed he was a champion. I mean, I have been... he became my key contact in the house. We have many friends. We have many friends. But Charlie was really a key friend.
Mm-hmm.
And we had many discussions. We used to see each other a lot socially.
Okay.
Me and my wife and our children, he knew each and every one of us. And of course, this issue, the question that you raised, came up.
Uh-huh.
I think there were two reasons, as you mentioned them, actually.
Okay.
He saw Israel as a David against the Arab Goliath.
Uh-huh.
He didn't say it in this word. This is my expression. I don't recall him saying that, but he gave the very distinct impression that Israel is a small country, threatened, surrounded by enemies who attack her every now and then, and Israel defends itself with its own blood and not asking for American troops to come to its rescue. And he was impressed by the tenacity, the courage of the Israelis.
Okay.
And of course, Israel was on the right side of the map for Charlie.
Gotcha.
And so I believe this is a combination. And he was very so unusual in his approach, but we'll touch on it later, maybe.
Okay.
So that's my answer.
Okay.
East-West, Israel on the right side of the map, and David against Goliath.
Okay, well, you know, again, reading through some of the material, it discusses that he sort of became dismayed after the 82 Lebanon situation. And really in the book, George Kill was talking about how much he confided in you personally about all of this. And I was wondering if you could speak to that a bit.
When he came first to Israel in 1982, when the war with Lebanon started, he was very much enthusiastic because he was with us against the PLO terrorist group.
Yeah.
And he went to Lebanon and came back and was quite impressed. So his first reaction was very positive, and he conveyed his good reaction, his positive reaction to the Prime Minister at the time, Menachem Begin, and others, and of course, everybody knew he's a great friend, etc. But when Israel stayed Lebanon and didn't quit and stayed there longer than needed, and then it became entangled in all kind of mishap.
Uh-huh.
Entangled, I put it this way. He didn't like the idea that Israel is occupying Lebanon.
Okay.
And he became angry. And at some point he told me, look, I'm not going back to Israel. In the past he used to visit Israel a few times a year.
Okay.
Not just once. He loved Israel and he loved the Israelis and he had many friends in Israel of all walks of life, culture and politics and military and whatever. Then he told me one day, you see, he said, I'm your friend. You can come and visit with me anytime you want, and we are the same friends that we used to be and will be.
Uh-huh.
But I am not going back to Israel because I don't like the way you handled the Lebanon war. And I conveyed it back to Israel, obviously.
Uh-huh.
And I told him, but, you know, a prime minister doesn't make a decision based on what a congressman or a senator likes or dislikes.
Sure.
But it was, we all grieved over that, I can say, because we knew him as a great friend. But over time, I think they reconciled, and then he started coming back, and there was one development in the meantime.
Okay.
He became very friendly with Egypt and Pakistan.
Yes.
And I have to say to his credit, and I was aware of all his, not the details of his dealing, but I was aware that he's visiting Egypt, visiting Pakistan, he has good relationship with the leadership there, etc. But he insisted in keeping his close relationship and friendship with Israel. And he told me many times, not that he had to, that by befriending Egypt and Pakistan, it does not affect his support and friendship for Israel.
Okay.
And indeed, that's the way he acted when anything came up which was an Israeli matter.
Okay. Actually, you bring me to a great point. In his relationship with Egypt, there's quite a scene described in the book and then portrayed in the movie, though I want to ask you about, and a little later, your reaction to the movies and book. But there's a scene described early in 1983 in which Wilson brings in Carol Shannon, the belly dancer, first to Israel, and then you join them to Egypt. And I really wanted to know if you could elaborate on what was described there. We have everything from, you know, secret, sensitive dealings going on to a belly dancer present. And I wanted to know if you could elaborate a little bit on that.
Yeah, I would say, what I'm thinking how to say it. Charlie, as far as I can remember, never came to Israel alone.
Okay.
That means he was accompanied by a lady friend.
Okay.
And we met all of them. He introduced them to us, to me and my wife. I have to say that as close as I was to Charlie, so was my wife, because we became really very close friends. I don't want to say family, but, you know, close to family.
Gotcha.
A very special relationship that I don't have with anybody else on Capitol Hill as I had with Charlie. And because it's also a matter of his character, of his personality. It's not just me being a charmer, it's him, you know, that, excuse me if I call myself a charmer, which I don't mean to, but, you know, I meant to say Charlie was a special human being. Okay, so one day he comes with a belly dancer. A belly dancer. Yeah, I'm going to Egypt at the invitation of the Minister of War, forgot his name, anyhow, it's in the book.
Yeah, it's Muhammad Abu Ghazala.
Ghazala. Muhammad Abu Ghazala, Field Marshal or Marshal or something like that.
Yes.
Okay. And he invites me, my wife, Maria, and we have common friends, are good friends of ours, the leading, I would say, the star actress on Israeli stage and movie.
Yeah.
Ila Almador and her husband Yankale.
Okay.
He invites us, the two couples, to come with him to Egypt as guests of the Egyptian government or the Egyptian Minister of War.
Wow, and that was quite a lot for you, right?
Very unusual. But, you know, we hesitated. But I said to my wife and to Gila Almagor, who came with us, eventually her husband couldn't come, but she came with us, and I said, look, Charlie would tell her, don't worry, you are under the protection of the U.S. government.
Okay.
And I said to my wife and our friend, let's go. I mean, what can be wrong with Charlie? We will be always with him. We won't move without him. And besides, the Ministry of War is protecting us. So we went there. But before that, Shannon, she was practicing in our home, and
oh wow!
I have a couple of friends, others that didn't go with us. We happened to be at our home in Jerusalem at the time we used to live, and she carried a tape recorder with her.
Okay,
would play the tape and she'd dance. For her, it was a rehearsal, you know, exercising.
Yeah.
But for us, it was a performance. And we, to tell you the truth, that was the first time and the last time in our life that somebody danced in our room, you know. Then we went to Egypt, and they put us in a special quarter at the Marriott Hotel, which is a very nice hotel. And we were received at the airport by defense people, I don't know who they were, drove us to the hotel, and we had, I don't remember how many days, close to a week.
Okay.
Beautiful. I mean, we enjoyed it very much, and they flew us over to the southern part of Egypt and visited excavation, etc.
Uh-huh.
However, let me put it, you asked me about the event in Egypt.
Yeah.
First of all, they put us in a quarter, in a kind of, you know, with a closed entrance that leads to different rooms.
Okay.
Shannon, who wanted to practice for the big event, took the tape recorder into the corridor, which was empty.
Okay.
Turned it on and started dancing. The guards who were guarding the entrance to the quarter have never seen in their belly dancer in the corridor of the hotel. So they left their posts and went to look at the Sharon Shannon. But Shannon didn't care. She was a very nice. She is, I believe. I lost contact with her after that.
Uh-huh.
She was a very nice lady, very gentle, very, really very easygoing. You wouldn't believe that she's the dancer if you talk to her. And then one evening we went to a restaurant, a nightclub, I'm not sure what was it exactly, a guest of the deputy minister of war.
Okay.
And there she danced. That was the event, that the peak of the visit as far as Shannon was concerned.
Yes.
And everybody looked and applauded, and she did. I know, we were mesmerized by her performance. She was a true dancer. And everybody was happy. And the happiest of all was Charlie.
Yes.
So that's about Shannon.
Okay. Well, you know, going on to Egypt with him,
yeah,
and then this being the sort of, obviously, the escalation of his involvement with what's been described as Charlie Wilson's war and his involvement in aiding the Mujahideen,
yeah,
in Afghanistan. How did Wilson talk to you, and specifically perhaps Israel, on the plight of the Mujahideen?
Yeah. First of all, when we were in Egypt, you mentioned it. We didn't stay with him 24 hours, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, we were going to the archaeological museum, and he had his own meetings. And as I understand, he was exploring the possibility of getting some military equipment from Egypt to ship over to Pakistan to the Mujahideen. He told me about his support for the Mujahideen with the declared aim of getting the Russians out of Afghanistan.
Yeah.
I was aware of it, of course. I was not aware of the details of his dealings with the Egyptians and the others, but what kept him busy, he told me about it, and at some point when he came to Israel, he asked me if I could put him in touch with one of the defense companies. In it, there are three major government-owned defense companies in Israel.
Okay.
One is Rafael, which is the missile defense house of Israel. One is the Israel Aircraft Industries, which specializes, among other things, in drones. And one is the Israel Military Industries, which is the main manufacturer of weapons, different kind of weapons.
Okay.
And he asked me to get him in touch with Israel Military Industries, which is called IMI, the initials IMI.
Yeah.
And I arranged a meeting, and he asked them whether they can build kind of a mortar that can be disassembled, mounted on a mule, taken up to wherever, and then assembled again and capable of shooting, firing.
Yeah.
And they went into some research, and they told him, it all was done through me. And they said, okay, we are ready to do that. But then he said, call it off.
Okay.
And I was wondering, why call it off? And then later on, I found out that because the CIA was involved in that,
yeah,
audit, apparently, and I got it second hand.
Okay.
But Charlie confirmed it. The Saudis didn't want any Israeli involvement in fighting the Mujahideen, I mean helping the Mujahideen to fight out the Soviets.
Okay.
And, okay, Charlie said, no deal, no deal. That's how it all ended. Other than that, to the best of my knowledge, and if it relates to Charlie, I was aware of everything that Charlie did in Israel. There was no other involvement of Israel as such in the fight against the Soviets.
Yeah.
Afghanistan.
Well, that raises the question. I mean,
one thing which I will, how should I say, clarify my role here.
Yeah.
Charlie throughout all those years and throughout all his visits, and there were plenty of visits, as I said before, except for the years which he didn't come, but when he came a number of times a year, I was his unofficial ambassador.
Gotcha.
I mean, he would be met at the airport by a representative of the embassy, collect his per diem or instructions or whatever, I don't know what was there. And then all the meetings with the Israeli officials from the prime minister down, I will attend, I will arrange, and at his request, I will attend.
Okay.
And I was happy to do that.
What was the motivation, I guess, on your part, or perhaps Israel's, or at least IMI's part, to want to help the Mujahideen?
That's very important that you raised it. Our interest was helping the United States of America.
Gotcha.
That's it. That's the prime concern of Israel then and now. And I, for one, if I may interject, I always, in my commentaries or otherwise, when I speak to this group or another, I say, America is protecting Israel, we should take American interest into consideration as well.
Gotcha.
And when you ask us, through a congressman that is a great supporter of Israel, and we know that he is not doing it single-handedly, I mean he does, but with the cooperation of CIA or whatever, and much of it is written in the book, obviously, we consider it a must to help.
Okay.
So it's not against the Soviets or for the Mujahideen. And we did not know the Mujahideen. And the Mujahideen, unfortunately, after Charlie's period, the epoch, they are not a great friends of Israel, to say the least.
Yeah.
Did it for the United States of America.
Yeah, okay. Well, mentioning this stuff being in the book, I'm interested. How did you feel about how you, as well as Charlie, were portrayed in both the book and the movie?
Okay. The movie is based on the book.
Yes.
I was told when I consulted some friends, and I happened to meet a lawyer who was visiting at Tel Aviv University. I don't remember his name, but he was a lawyer from L.A. who was very familiar with Hollywood business.
Okay.
I consulted with him, and I asked him, the movie based on the book and is not accurate in a few ways that I'll mention right away. And I asked him, they didn't consult me.
Okay.
Before producing the movie. And they played my role any way they wanted. And he told me, look, if you have a lot of money and you want to fight Hollywood, go ahead and spend your money on that. But he didn't recommend to me to file a lawsuit and conduct a prolonged, trial with them. In any event, I can tell you for a fact, I am not, have never been a Mossad agent.
Okay.
As I am portrayed in the movie. I am also not an arms dealer. I am a consultant to Israeli defense and other industries, but my contribution, contribution, so to say, is I know the political scene in Washington. How do you get a budget approved or appropriated? I'm not the maven in technical matters. I don't know how to fire a pistol even.
Gotcha.
If I have meetings in Washington that deals with weapon systems, somebody comes with me and introduces it. So these two points, it's very important for me to clarify. I have never been a Mossad agent, and I've never been an arms dealer, and I'm not.
Now, did you ever have conversations with Charlie about this and about what was written in the book? And I know the timing may have not been too long, but about the movie as well.
Well, as for the book, Charlie himself requested that I sit down with George Kreil, the author, and tell him anything I wanted.
Okay.
I did sit down with George. We had a long conversation, only once, I wasn't very happy in talking about myself for a book. To tell you the truth, I don't like to be exposed, you know.
Sure.
But Charlie insisted that I do, and I also guessed that that George will get information from everybody else, so there's no point, you know, in not telling him. So I told him all I think, all I knew about Charlie, everything he asked me, and I read the book obviously afterwards. And the war in Afghanistan, the Mujahideen, you know, that prompted the... I think it was... wasn't it 9/11 that prompted the publication of the book? And
yeah, it was not too far after. I think Krill had been working on it for quite a while, but you're right, it came out right in the aftermath of 9/11.
Right. No, the book was written before, but didn't come out for some reason. And all of a sudden, it became a hit. Because of 9/11.
Yeah, that sounds about right to me, too.
I read the book, and I have to tell you my impression. The book, as far as I know, what I know about Charlie and his dealings, and of course dealing with me, the book, I can say, is more or less accurate.
Okay.
It's a good source. It's a good resource. And if anyone can ask me what should I know about Charlie, the first thing I will tell him, read the book. Will I tell him, see the movie? I will tell him, yeah, go and see the movie for your pleasure. But don't take it as an historical resource that you can build any theory on or anything on it. I would say that the movie is, you know, entertainment.
Sure.
Nothing more. Charlie, I must say to my... I regret it till this very day. He, at that time, he was already after his... heart transplant and not in very good shape.
Okay.
But he would go to Hollywood and be there on the scene and invited me over to be there and meet Julia Roberts and Tom Hanks and all the big names.
Okay.
His other reason declined and I regret it. Anyhow.
No, fair enough. You know, you were mentioning how close you were socially. You know, your wife, your children are friends with with Charlie Wilson. But at the same time, you're talking about him always bringing a new girl with him to Israel. How much of the good time Charlie moniker is really something of an invention of the media versus something that was real? And how did you feel about that as his friend?
Well, Charlie, about the media, I didn't notice, you know, great stories about Charlie in the media, except when he was investigated about, you know, the story about...
Yeah.
He was acquitted, of course, about cocaine, I believe it was, and whatnot. Charlie Wilson was not a media story in Israel every time he came for a visit. For no particular reason, as far as I recall. In the United States... You know, I can make no comment because I wasn't here continuously. I came and went, and Charlie, I can say one thing or a few things about Charlie, which I think it's important. Charlie was a good man, good heart man. He was very generous.
Yes.
In treating other people, including the girls that came with him and our staff office. I mean, I'm sure you talked to his staff members.
Yes.
He had talked to him. And I saw him, how he treats, he cares about their private life. He can be of help, you know, if they needed this and needed that. He was extremely generous man. Extremely. And that's why both my wife and I myself, we fell in love with him, with this human being.
Yeah.
And it went along very well with his crisis and problems. You know, we knew his first wife.
Okay, Jerry.
Well, Jerry. And they parted amicably. And at least when we talked to Jerry or talked to Charlie, they didn't get along well and they parted. But they were good. How can you not be friendly with Charlie Wilson? That's the question. he stood strong even in very dire times. I remember when he was under investigation, he was very stressed. Even in one of his visits to Israel, He was late to a party I threw at my home for him, and a lot of people came to meet Charlie Wilson. He became a legend in Israel. And he was late and late and late and late. And, you know, and I called, and the line was busy in his hotel room, and then he came an hour later. People waited for him, and he was on the phone with his lawyer in Washington.
Okay.
But anyhow, he came out of it, and... We remember the good time, Charlie, in the broad sense of it.
Okay. Now, you maintaining a relationship, did you also get to know Barbara as well?
Oh, yeah, very much so. Barbara, we knew through Charlie, of course, in the beginning of our relationship with Charlie.
Oh, okay.
She was dating him, or they were dating. I don't remember exactly the circumstances, but we met Barbara then. She was a ballet dancer and very pretty, still is. And then she disappeared from the horizon of Charlie.
Okay.
So we remembered her well, but our path didn't cross. And then one day Charlie tells us that he is dating Barbara, and one... Oh, no, no, yeah. Remind me of telling you about a wedding ceremony in the Peshawar pass in Afghanistan.
Okay.
But that before that. Then he met, he told us that he is going out with Barbara. One day I get an invitation for Charlie and Barbara...
Oh, okay.
And I was invited, and I came over. It was a very limited, close, you know, a kind of ceremony. Very few people came, really close friends, and I felt honored and privileged to be one of the close circle, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It was in an inn in Virginia, and overnight there, and it was nice, a very nice celebration, and Charlie was as happy as I could see him happy. And ever since then, we used to see Charlie and Barbara, and even today we meet with Barbara every now and then when we are here. Yeah, and we knew her from before.
Yeah.
It was no surprise, except that she was as pretty as she was years ago.
Well, speaking as a friend, how did you... see Charlie as a family and friend, as a family man, as a friend, his relationship with not only you, but his own family and friends?
I met his sister in Waco, I believe she lives.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Sharon.
That's the only thing I knew about his family. And
okay.
I met her here or there through him, of course. But Charlie was very generous to our family. He loved kids.
Okay.
Once when we were at the embassy here, he invited Maria, my wife, and me to go with him to a cold area in West Virginia. And it was a weekend, and I don't know how it came out. We couldn't leave our little son. Small son, he was 6 or 7 years or 8 years old, I'm not sure. And we drove together in his car to West Virginia.
Okay.
And he was very kind to our son. And our son he was teasing our son about something. And our son, lo and behold, he didn't... have any respect for a congressman. You don't address a congressman like this. Charlie, I'm going to give you a quiz about the capitals of the states of America.
Okay.
I'm not sure whether Charlie asked him and he gave the answer, or my son asked Charlie about it, but there was quite a fight, and Charlie lost. But you know, the interaction between the two was fantastic. I mean, you could see that he liked children. I mean, you know how you treat people. That.
Do you think he regretted that or wanted children, or he just enjoyed genuinely other people's children?
confided in us his feelings about children.
Okay.
I think he came to the conclusion that this is my interpretation. But after he had his heart troubles and after he got, you know, it's written in the book that he was in Paris and there was a problem and here and there. We knew that he is not very well.
Yeah.
I think he decided enough with the, you know, traveling each time with somebody else in his quiet place, steady place. Barbara was a beautiful, perfect match for him.
Yeah.
Saw them a lot together, and you can't miss a feeling of happiness and feeling good, etc. I don't know if he missed the family or not. He never told us about it.
Okay.
One could guess from the way he were watching him treating other people that probably he did.
Okay. Now you said to remind you to ask you about a wedding ceremony in Afghanistan.
The girls that he was dating, I'm trying to remember her name, but I know she was of a Ukrainian family.
Okay.
In the United States, and he was dating her. One day Charlie tells me, mark the date, whatever it was, I don't remember the exact date.
Okay.
The date, and what should be marked is the date, I'm going to marry this young lady.
About what year was this?
It was after, of course, the Mujahideen drove away the Soviets.
Okay.
And sometimes in the 80s.
Okay.
I don't remember, really. I can find out, you know, because it's written somewhere. He invites me and my wife to a wedding ceremony elsewhere in the Peshawar passage between Pakistan and Afghanistan.
Okay.
I tell him, Charlie, said, yes, Peshawar. I said to him, no, I'm an Israeli, excuse me, I'm not going there. Hey, you are under the protection of the American government, I am a congressman, you will be protected, don't worry. And he insisted.
Okay.
And I said to my wife, and my wife said, over my dead body, I'm not going there to the Peshawar, you know, pass. Never mind if it were in Karachi or, you know, some other place. Eventually, the wedding was called off, and Charlie left her, and now it's just a fairy tale from the history of Charlie Wolf.
How funny. Now, actually, there was a couple of other questions I was going to let Laura ask you, if that's all right.
Sure, of course.
Okay. There's some people who, I guess there's different political philosophies attributed to Charlie.
Yeah.
In regards to the war in particular, some people considered him a war hawk, like the Cold Warrior against Russia, and that was why he insisted on helping, whereas others kind of see him as a man of the people, like it was a humanitarian issue. What was your impression, like what side did he fall on? Was he more of the conservative or liberal on that front?
First of all, I have to say that Charlie was an avid reader of all histories. He read many books on Churchill and others, all related to war. He may have read also fiction and others, I'm not saying he didn't, but what I knew of him is that wars were of much of interest for him. Graduate of the Naval Academy, of course, etc. Now, as for his I would say I can characterize him based on my experience, of course. My experience may have been very limited in comparison with others.
Yes.
On defense matters, on security matters, on foreign affairs, he was very conservative. Defense, Soviets are our enemy, we have to push them out from everywhere they have some stronghold or footstep or whatever. On domestic issues, I found him to be very liberal. How else can a gentleman from a district in East Texas, which is made of a black community and not so rich red and people, rednecks, etc. And you know that better than me.
Oh yeah, we live with it every day.
How could he be elected if we were not good for them on domestic matters? And you know, thanks to Charlie, he once invited me to his district, and I flew over there. He wasn't there, but other people took care of me, and I realized which community he represents. And I'm saying it's not only because of that. He was liberal in domestic matters of healthcare, social security, jobs, etc., etc., and very hardliner conservative on security and defense matter and foreign affairs. That's my impression.
Okay. Let's see. Did Charlie ever discuss any particular political issues concerning Texas or the United States in general with you?
Oh, yeah, a lot. Because when you support Israel as strongly as he did, you have to talk to him about why and what the matter is, etc. Charlie Wilson, and I speak for all Israelis, I take the liberty to do that. Charlie has been a strong supporter of Israel, upfront, leading members of Congress in his support for Israel. And we talked about it at the beginning of our conversation, why? But I say that there was no matter that related to Israel that wasn't brought up, but first then among the first, with Charlie. Be it a foreign policy matter, a foreign aid matter, security matter. Charlie, for instance, and that in this I was involved, was very interested in defense cooperation between the two countries. And Israel had a lot of technologies that were developed in Israel because of obvious reasons. We were facing threats all the time. And we had our own defense industry. But he was always interested in how to get Israeli technology into the United States, how to form, you know, what kind. He was not getting into the business part of it, but he was getting about how can the United States benefit from Israel as much as Israel benefits from the United States, mainly in the defense area. Was very much interested in that. And when he was unhappy with Israel, we had long discussions. And sometimes I agreed with him. I am not, you know, an official representative, a spokesman for the government. Though I'm an Israeli, I love Israel, and I always would try to defend Israel when it is unjustly criticized. But our relationship was very openly. He did not hesitate to criticize the government of Israel, and I did not hesitate to tell him that you are wrong on this or that. That's, you know, when you are true friends, speak freely.
Right.
That's the way I felt with Charlie. Charlie got a reputation among the Israeli community here and in Israel in general that he is a true friend you can rely on. And criticism. I don't remember any particular time except when he was unhappy with the way that we conducted the Lebanon business, and he left no doubt in the mind of anyone because he just didn't come and people were asking where is he. Before I forget, there is one element that I should mention, and that's the Lavie plane project in Israel.
Yes.
I don't know if it came up in your questions, but I think if we talk about Israel, we should mention that.
Yes. The fighter jet.
Yeah. A fighter jet that didn't come into being. Eventually.
Yeah, okay.
Nora, did I answer your question? Maybe.
Oh, yes, you did.
Well, okay, yeah, speak of that, because it's very interesting there, and it will dovetail into a second question, and that is, so he's working with you to get the Lavie fighter jet, because U.S. funds are not usually given to buy, or usually are only given to buy U.S.-made weapons, and he's trying to get this waived, and after you maybe answer the his involvement in trying to get the Lavie bill. Also, did he ever discuss with you, or what were your perceptions about his sort of straddling the line of what was appropriate for a congressman to be doing based on his constitutional powers.
I took it for granted that a congressman knows what is right and what is wrong.
Yes.
I didn't feel that this is... Although I took my master's degree at Georgetown University in American government, and I learned the Constitution, and thank God for that, and all the others, you know, elements of that serve as a background to your daily work on the Hill, as I did for the embassy and then later on as a consultant. But it was not for me to tell Charlie you're right or you're wrong. I mean, I would assume that he knows what's good and what's bad and what should be done and what should not be done. So,
yeah.
As respect, I think what I did ask for his help when I thought he could help, and he was a great helper. And it didn't come in the way of his doing any other things with any other, American companies or his constituency, or there was never a conflict. I, for one, would never put him in a conflict situation, of course.
Mm-hmm.
That much I knew. But never checked his bit or his did not. He knew what he was doing. And, even today, if I talk to a congressman or a member of the administration, do I ask him, is it right, is it wrong? If it's wrong, he will tell me it's wrong, but I never raise it. I try to know in advance what is right and what is wrong. So the issue didn't come up.
Okay.
I trusted him. Al De La Vie. De La Vie was a baby, I can say, of a gentleman in Israel whose name is Misha Arens. At the time, he was Minister of Defense. He was also ambassador to the United States at a certain time.
How do you spell his last name?
Last name was Arens, A-R-E-N-S, as in sugar.
Thank you.
And first name was Moshe, M-O-S-H-E. Nickname is Misha. We call him Misha.
Okay.
Those who know him well would call him Misha. And Misha was a great supporter. He's an engineer. He worked at the Israeli aircraft industry. And he was a great supporter of producing the La Vie fighter jet in Israel. But Israel did not have the money. So,
yeah.
They thought of getting to Congress. One day, at a restaurant named Charlie's Crab.
Okay.
Charlie and I, I was having dinner there with a friend who was a staff member of the House Appropriations Committee. Charlie was there as well. I don't remember, he came by, he happened to be there. The three of us were sitting together at the table and discussing La Vie. I was not on mission for the La Vie. I knew about that, but nobody asked me to get involved, and I wasn't.
Okay.
At dinner, I think it was reported in the Washington Post at the time. It was a story, a full story of the how De La Vie was created and financed. The meeting at Charlie's Crab is there. If you look at the Washington Post archives, I'm sure you will find it. But I saw it, I read it at the time. And we were kind of conferring how to help Israel, and Charlie said, okay, we'll do it. And when Charlie says, we'll do it, it's done. And eventually the United States appropriated $500 million.
Okay. Wow.
But the end of the story is that the government of Israel canceled it.
Did it? Okay. And what was was there a particular reason for that?
I think it was the relationship, American considerations, I would put it this way.
Okay.
I think your government was not very happy with that. I know that at the time, Mr. Dov Zakheim, who was at the Pentagon, was very, very opposed to that. And he reflected the view of the American Defense Department, etc. And we didn't want to, the government of Israel didn't want to get into a crisis with the U.S.
Sure.
And they canceled it.
Okay. Well, talking about the United States sort of political landscape in that regard, I know Laura had another question in that regard.
As the political landscape shifted from more liberal-dominated to conservative, particularly following the Gingrich Revolution, did you notice any changes in Charlie, or did he speak to you just about how that influenced him, or possibly limits to what he could do as far in comparison to before?
You mean domestically here?
Domestically or even internationally, was how did he react both politically and personally to the Gingrich Revolution?
I must admit, I don't recall, maybe my memory fails me, but I don't recall any, hasn't come to mind any particular reaction to that. I'm not sure about his relationship with Gingrich, I have to tell you. I don't want to speculate on something that I'm not. I will have to...
Of course.
Beg, forgiveness for not answering the question. I don't remember.
Oh, no problem. Well, actually, as he was retiring, did he give to you any reason why he was retiring?
Yeah. He said that he had enough. I know one thing he didn't like, and he was complaining to me. No sooner had he been elected, he had to start again fundraising. And he didn't like very much. He had to do it. Didn't like very much calling and asking for money. And he said, enough is enough. And there was one, he had a tough competition.
Yeah.
He got tired. Not physically, but, you know, I can understand it. I mean, you have to be nice to people, and I don't want to use other terms, but sometimes I don't like what you're doing, and he confided in me that it's very hard on him. And we know, or we all know, that every member of Congress, House or Senate has to do it. Otherwise, where will he get the money for the campaign? And Charlie said, okay, I'll leave, and I'll be a consultant here and there, make some money, and then retire. He had a plan to retire.
Okay.
Got married, he said, that's it, I'm going back to Texas, and I'm going to spend the rest of my life there, I'll make speeches, and, you know, like every other member, not a consultant anymore, once he goes to Texas. But while he was here, and I used to meet a lot of him, with him.
Okay.
Pennsylvania 700, that were...
Yeah. Now, following his retirement, and then, of course, following the events of 9/11, often people had criticized Charlie for getting weapons to the Mujahideen. Did he ever discuss with you those charges people were leveling against him for what later takes place in Afghanistan?
This is the way he described it to me when we had conversation. I'm now putting together different comments from different conversations because we never have hold a brainstorming of an issue. We meet, we go to dinner, we talk about different issues, but you know,
sure.
Collect from here and from there. He did what he did, helping the Mujahideen with the blessing, eventually, with the blessing of the U.S. government. He started it the way it's described in the book, and then he got the government, the U.S. government behind him, of course Congress behind him. So you cannot say that Charlie did it clandestinely or, you know, single-handedly. Single-handedly he did, as he started it.
Yeah.
Yes. He was very unhappy with the fact that after the Soviets left, U.S. left Afghanistan as well.
Yeah.
And that, I think it's reflected in the book, and it's also reflected in the last sentence in the movie.
Yeah.
Which is correct. He was very unhappy with that, but, you know, he did what he did, and probably didn't say I'm tired or whatever, but probably said enough is enough. How, you know, how can a human being conduct two campaigns like the one he did? I mean, one is enough for a human being, in my view.
Yeah.
But what he did is a historical phenomenon, you know?
Yeah.
So he was unhappy that you left Afghanistan. You should have stayed there. But we didn't go into the details. If you stayed, what would you do, etc., etc. But the idea was, at that time, get the Russians out, period. The job is done, and the rest of it, somebody else will take care of.
Okay. Now, to your knowledge, did anybody in either the Bush or even, I guess, for a small window there, the Obama administration, did anybody ever contact him to ask him his thoughts on a region that he was, for the United States and for the Congress, for all intents and purposes, the expert?
I'm not sure I got your question. Did anyone...
To your knowledge, did he ever discuss with you if anybody ever from either the Bush or a small window of time, Obama administrations, ever tried to contact him about Afghanistan or Pakistan with involvement over there? Because he obviously would be someone to talk to.
I don't recall him telling me anything about it. He may have, again, you know, it's years ago. I don't recall that he told me about the administration contacted him, either Bush or Obama. No, the answer is, I do not recall. The answer is not no. The answer is, I don't remember if he told me.
Okay. Now, is there something, in the course of us asking you a bunch of questions, something we've failed to ask you, and that you're thinking to yourself, wow, there's something I really want to share, and you just haven't asked the right question?
You know, when you think of Charlie, what comes to mind is a very unusual person. I repeat what I said before, but this is Charlie that I remember, a very good-hearted person, very generous one, very a man with strong views, that we like, who are strong on defense and liberal on domestic matters, charming, likable person, always it's a pleasure spending time with them. I can tell you a story. It's more about me than about Charlie.
No, please do.
But with me, it's always connected to Charlie. I was taking my master's degree at Georgetown University.
Okay.
The last 2 years of my stay at embassy, I went to evening classes, etc. And then I was given the option to take a final oral examination, provided I read tons of books and everything about Congress and the political science and American government. And I spent days and nights in libraries and at home reading, trying to digest as much as I can. And then comes the day of the examination, and I go to Georgetown University, and there is a room, an office, three professors sitting behind the desk. One of them I knew because he was my teacher, and the other two I didn't know where they came from and still don't know who they were. And for 1.5 hours, because I looked at the watch when we started, he bombarded me with, like a machine gun, question. And then came a question: when a congressman is elected, what is his prime goal as a member, elected member of Congress? And I thought to myself in a split second, well, motherhood, apple pie, you know, this and that. And then I said, I think his prime goal is to get reelected. All three of them said, really? to myself, Zvi Rafiach, 2 years you worked so hard writing papers, tons of books. Why did you have to say that? Hey, motherhood, apple pie, and the good of the people. And I was hoping that they will ask me another question, so I could, you know, come back to the question and try to make it look better. All they said is, really? And I said, thank you very much. And wait at the dean's office and we'll come back and let you know something. I went to the dean's office. Secretary is there. She knew me, of course, because I was there for 2 years, you know, coming and going.
Mm-hmm.
Asked me, Mr. Rafia, why do you have ashen face? I confess to you that I didn't know what ashen means.
Okay.
Word. So she explained to me. I said to a lady, I don't remember his name, her name, I goofed. No, no, you are a great student, etc., etc. Okay. After 5 minutes, which looked like 5 hours, the three came. Congratulations, you got your degree, you did very well, and I was a happy man. What do I do next? My car, drive up Capitol Hill. Whom do I go to? Charlie Wilson.
Gotcha.
And I say to him, Charlie, this is what happened. They didn't tell me when they came to congratulate me that I was right. They just congratulated me. So, you know, I thought maybe it's a sum of up. Some failed, some plus, and altogether he passed.
Okay.
And I wanted to know the truth. So I drove up to Capitol Hill, and I went to Charlie, and I told him the story, and I told him, Charlie, did I goof? No way. What are you talking about? You know, the first day after I get reelected, I am fundraising for my next election because I want to get reelected.
Yeah.
I said, Charlie, thank you very much. Probably you saved my career. So that's how I got my master's degree. And I think I learned from Charlie how it works, you know, because he was the closest friend. So I saw him in action, fundraising, calling, you know, telling me about calling. And at one point, I was invited as to a fundraiser. Of course, I didn't participate, but I just saw a fundraiser in New York. How it's done. Wow. I mean, you have to be very, how should I say, courageous person to talk to people and be nice to them, etc. But for Charlie to be nice was, you know, like saying hello, good morning. That was the trait.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have, along with the story you just shared, is there a sort of a favorite memory, just a singular memory you have involving you and Charlie?
The first memory is what I told you in the beginning of our conversation, showing up at the embassy. By the way, ever since then, no congressman or senator shows up at the embassy. It's a fact. They don't do that. So this was very unusual. I think something in particular, I think the whole life of Charlie as I know it, particular event. Charlie is unusual. I'm trying not to be sentimental. I have to tell you honestly, I have many friends on Capitol Hill. I don't try to boast, you know, and be a self-promoter. Charlie, I have many friends. Charlie is unusual. I don't have any particular moment. Every dealing with Charlie was particular, really.
Well, that's a good answer right there.
That's the way I feel.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thank you so much for taking the time. I've seen we've gone a good hour and 15 here. Again, I want to offer you any chance to add anything that you think we may need to inquire about. Otherwise, I think I want to thank you for agreeing to sit down and talk with us.
Sure. Well, you see, I'll be honest with you. I told my wife, it's my duty, really, to share with you because you're doing a great, you have a great project on your hands.
I tell you, it's been a wonderful project, having gone around and talked to so many people. And as you know, we're going to D.C. here in about a week and a half, and
yeah.
It's been humbling. My only regret is I never got to meet him personally, but
really? I would say this. First of all, I said 2 hours. If you insisted on getting another half an hour, I would, for Charlie's sake, I would sit again. I would say this.
Uh-huh.
If I come across, I may look into some of the, what should I say, I don't have an archive, but I have something related to Charlie. I'll go through that again, and if I find out or it strikes something that is worth talking to or telling you, tell me, how can I get in touch with you, and when is the deadline for your project, or is there
sure no, there's no deadline. I'm committed to keeping the project open. We've been doing this now for over a year, and we've collected well over 20 interviews.
For how long, you said?
We've been doing it for over a year now.
Over a year,
yeah.
Okay.
Or actually, we're coming up on a year. And we've collected about 21 interviews. With everybody from district office staff to his sister to his nephew to friends like Buddy Temple. We interviewed Joanne Herring. We've interviewed all the AAs except for Charles Simpson, which we'll be doing in just a week now. We're just trying to get anybody and everybody and try to really get a full, more robust picture of Charlie Wilson, whether it's Representative Charlie Wilson or my buddy Charlie Wilson, a fuller understanding. So there's no time limit onto it.
I see. Okay.
So we welcome anything. This is a genuine commitment to the historical record. We are the official repository of his archives.
Right.
So we take our charge very seriously and sincerely.
You know, first of all, I have your email address.
Yes.
I'll be more than happy if I come across something at any time in the future. I will just send you an email and we'll arrange how to convey the whatever I want to tell you to you.
Yeah, no problem. Email is, in today's world, is the absolute best way to get a hold of me.
But we can always talk on the phone. It's not a big deal for me.
Okay.
I keep coming to... I'm going to be back here on the 15th of April. Or I can call you from home. It's not a big deal for me. The charges are not that high that I can't afford to...
Sure. Well, and make me call. I'm, like, right now I'm calling from the university. We'll just do it on the university's dime, so you can tell me when to call you.
Right. No, we'll find a way. That would not be a problem. So I'll be glad to add if I can think of anything. I can do one more thing. I can consult with one or two people. Maybe they can come up with something that reminds me of what I may have forgotten or just didn't think of. I want to help, and I want to help Charlie's memory.
Yes,
very
yes.
Important for me on a personal basis, and I'm really telling you the truth. It's not just sharing in a project, you know.
Yeah.
It's not like talking about U.S.-Israel relations and I am the expert. It's about my best friend, Charlie. That's the way I see that. So I'll be happy to add on if there is anything of value that I could do.
That would be wonderful. We're always interested
in... You mentioned Joan Herring.
Yes.
She was exceptional that came with him to Israel. That's where we met her.
Okay.
Normally, people come with young, you know what it means.
Yeah.
I mean, not old. Young is not old.
Yeah.
Girls or ladies. I had to call them girls. ladies. Joanne was not so young, not old, of course, but she was a different kind of person. She visited us with him at our home. I mean, he treated her like all other companions he brought with him.
Okay.
It was something special. And if I can, I mean, this is for history now, not for the Houston Gazette or the Austin Chronicle or something.
Correct.
I had a feeling, and so did my wife, that her was more serious.
Ah, okay.
This is our feeling. I'm not sure that it's...
Understood.
...him anymore, unfortunately. But Joanne was different. Was a different lady altogether. And I flew all the way from Israel to Arlington for his funeral.
Okay.
I was glad they told me I could do that. And I met Joanne there. And we reminisced. I don't know if you consulted her. Maybe you should.
Yes, we have.
You did?
Yes.
But may I ask you, did she say something more sentimental? I don't know how to say it. Personal about him.
Well, she obviously had an affection that was evident, and her personal feelings was pretty much as conveyed in the book, saying that they had a romantic feelings, but it never went too far, and then, of course, she wound up getting married herself.
She wanted.
Well, that's what the way it seemed.
Yeah. No, you said she wanted to get married.
Well, she certainly was uncommittal in her statements. If I were to review it again, she certainly expressed an affection towards romantic feelings, but that it never matured never matured into anything else.
Yeah. You just confirmed our perception of the relationship, and in this case, I count more on my wife because she can trace, and track.
Well, that's something I would to help. There's two things. One is if you can ever think of anybody whom we should be talking to, help us out with contacts. And the other is maybe having another conversation with your wife.
That's a possibility. Let me talk to her if she is willing, ready, and if she has something to add to it. I mean, she wouldn't. I'm all for it as far as I'm concerned. It depends on her.
Yeah, exactly. Just, and I'm sure I'm preaching to the choir, you know this. We're just trying to get all perspectives, and anybody who had a relationship with Charlie in any way, I think, is best for the historical record.
I'll tell you what I think I have in mind. This gentleman, Misha Arends,
okay,
ambassador and minister of defense, and related to De La Vie.
Okay.
When I go back home, he speaks fluently English, of course, better than me, with no heavy accent as mine. I will tell him about the interview, the conversation we had here, and about your project. And if he is willing, I will give you his number, or we'll make the arrangement. And
that would be great.
I think it would be worth talking to him, by all means.
See, and that's exactly what we're looking for. That would be great. Thank you.
You knew him as an ambassador as well.
Oh, okay.
So, let me talk to him, but you will have to wait 3 weeks at least, because I won't be back home. I'm going from here to London, etc. But sometime in early April, I'll be contacting you and tell you if he's willing and ready, and then we'll take it from there.
That would be great. Thank you so much.
Now, when you have any document coming out, made public in one way or another...
Sure. Let me tell you about some of the immediate plans and then the longer-term plans.
Right.
The first immediate plans is to conduct these oral histories and then get them transcribed, that is, put into text.
Yeah.
And we've been doing very well on that front. Because they're in an archive, they will be public. However, if you note the example of the release form I sent you, you can place restrictions on that, though I would encourage you not to, but of course you could, because it is to be open for research. With that said, some of the immediate small things we're doing is... we're putting together museum exhibits. We're putting together web-based information. That's just smaller stuff. Important stuff, but smaller stuff.
On the internet or on the premise of the university?
Well, one on the premise of the university, and then the other goal is to eventually get a database online.
Ah, good.
And, just to make access to this material is our goal. We want it to be useful. The other is to develop more robust histories. Not that Creel is deficient, but, for example, Laura here, the student, to have more serious, rigorous research into Charlie Wilson, the politician, that goes beyond just Afghanistan and goes beyond the Hollywood image, and to really look at who he was as a man, who he was as a politician, including his Texas state years.
Yeah.
So I just think more rigorous research is our goal, and to produce actual works. A colleague of mine, Dr. Scott Sosby, here at the university, is going to work on a more academic biography of Charlie Wilson that these oral histories are going to help to anchor. So there's many projects that we're trying to grow.
Great. You have my information, right?
I do.
Email address, address, telephone number, etc.
I do. Well, I have your email, and I have the cell phone number that you gave me to call you this morning.
Oh, no, that's in that's in Washington. But, I mean, you know, in Washington, when I come, I stay always at the same hotel, the Park Hyatt, where I'm talking from now. But I was asking about Israel. So maybe I'll send you my address.
Yeah, I would recommend that. Just shoot me an email with the preferred contact information.
Yeah. This telephone number that you called me, I mean, the cell phone is just when I am in the United States. I don't use it in Israel. I have a different number in Israel.
Understood.
I will send you, when I get back home, my information, address, telephone number, etc., etc. The reason that I mentioned it is that I would like very much for you to put me on your mailing list.
Will do.
Whether electronically or anything you send by mail, anything that relates to Charlie, my wife and I will always be interested.
Well, great. Well, again, we're planning to make these, and we will. It's not planning. We will make these available to everyone, including you. And also, I will send you a copy of our interview here, as well as the transcription.
Excellent, excellent. Now, two more things. If you have two more minutes for me.
No problem. Should I go ahead and turn off the recorder?
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I'm going to do now, and we are ending the interview with V. Rafia.